One really helpful conversation I had in the break is I really don't want you to be concerned about scale, right? What's most important is what God calls you to do, right? And whether it's to impact two people or five people or 20 people or 50,000 people, in God's economy, obedience is the most important currency, right? So the things that I'm talking about, some of them have significant scale, but some of them don't, right? These principles apply no matter what. That's why God's plans always have God's provision, and it doesn't matter what the scale is. That's the most important thing. So I had referenced earlier that vocationally, I've been in a very unique position. I've had the opportunity to work for a supported self-publishing company, the world's largest, 350,000 books, 250,000 authors on six continents. And the running joke is, if we had someone in the Antarctica Science Center who wanted to publish a book, we'd do it for free so we could say we cover the globe. But I've also worked with traditional publishers who publish books, and I've worked in Hollywood. And what I found is that the ability to tell stories, no matter whether it's a book or whether it's an email or whether it's a letter or whether it's a film or a video, the principles are all the same. And so one of the things that you need to understand when you're writing a story, right? And I'm going to show you a before and after example of this is you want to start with what's the inciting action? What compelled you to take the action that you're going to take? And that's how every good book, every good movie, every good letter, something has to come because that's how you draw the reader or the viewer into your story. So one of my favorite examples, and I'm older now, so it's always tough to find a movie example that stretches generations, but I'm going to try this one. Raiders of the Lost Ark, the first one, right? Anyone see that movie? The first one, Raiders of the Lost Ark, okay? Now look at this young guy here from Iceland, like, I have no idea what you're talking about. Raiders of the Lost Ark, no?
I was in Ukraine.
It was in Ukraine. Anyway.
Indiana Jones.
Indiana Jones. Indiana Jones. All right, first one. So first one, Indiana Jones is in this cave, and he grabs this statue, and this giant boulder comes running after him. And so it makes this amazing opening scene, right? And he escapes, and the boulder doesn't crush him, and he falls to the ground. And does anyone remember what happens next when he falls to the ground outside the cave? A Nazi takes the statue from him. That's actually the inciting action that sends the whole movie into motion and creates this huge series, right? So one of the things you need to think about is what's the inciting action to your story? What prompted you to say, I cannot look the other way? I have to do this out of obedience to what God is calling me to do. The second thing is, what are you compelled to do about it? So, I always think of this story of the Levite who passed by the person on this side of the road. The Good Samaritan couldn't look the other way. He was compelled to do something. And if you remember, what he did is he picked up the person who was on the side of the road, he took him to get healed, and he left money to make sure that the job was complete, right? So anytime when it comes to ministry things, oftentimes there's an inciting action that drew us to do something. And that is part of the story. That's a part of what makes people understand. And then the third thing you want to talk about is, what will it take you to accomplish it? What is it that incited this action in you? Why are you compelled to do anything? And then what is it going to take for you to accomplish it? This is where I go back to God's plans always have God's provision. And then the fourth thing is how can someone play a part in helping you accomplish that? Like, one of the things I've seen as a failure in some of the communications from ministries is not only do they not follow these first three, but the fourth one, they don't make it easy for someone to know, what can I do? If you go back to Moses' plan, and I'm sorry, I forgot your name, ma'am. What's your name?
Anne.
Anne. The specifics that Moses had, right? What you want is you want to make it easy for someone to grab on and say, I can do that. I can do that, right? I gave you the example of the concrete guys, right? Like, I wouldn't know how to pour concrete if you gave me $1 million. But here's two guys who said, I can do that. I can do that. And so their talent, their resources helped something that will ultimately impact ministry. And then this is a simple thing. How do people respond? Make your call to action very clear. So these five things are very, very important. What's the inciting action? What are you compelled to do about? What will it take to accomplish that? How can someone play a part in accomplishing that? And how does a person respond? So I'm going to ask, he's going to pass out two examples. And just let's just wait till everyone gets them. This is a before and after letter. And I'm going to tell you a little story about these. The first one that has all the type. So let me tell you the story behind this. A good friend of mine had a daughter who was going to marry a man who was going to go on support to be a missionary within the campus. And my friend was trying to help him as he was trying to raise support as an individual missionary. And he looked at this and he just knew it wasn't very effective. This violates every rule that I've talked about. It's all text. It's hard to read. It doesn't give me the inciting action, right? The first line is, we serve an awesome God. I want to start out writing that because he is the reason I'm writing this letter. It's like the thing I showed you with the Christ Praise Center. It's not wrong. It's not offensive. It's just not very compelling. So my friend asked, before his now son-in-law was married to his daughter, hey, would you talk to my friend Keith? So I met Evan at a Starbucks, and he showed me his letter. And I had the conversation with him that I've had with you guys today. Like, there's a way to make it much more effective in terms of what you're doing. And so it took a few drafts, but he came back with this second letter. And I want you to look at these two, right? It's literally the same information, but it's organized along these principles. First of all, his opening line, a mission field I never expected. Indianapolis is considered by the North American Mission Board to be harder to reach than Los Angeles and New York combined. That's a stunning statement if you live in the U.S., because you would think those two places would be much more difficult. The harvest is ready, and we need more workers committed to reaching out to the city of God. When I moved to Indianapolis in 2000, I had no idea who, and I was confused about who Jesus was. So he talks about the inciting action. What's the compelling thing he's going to do? What does this mean for me? In the heart of Indianapolis, there's a university named, and he names it. And he talks about how he wants to reach that campus. So this is not a scale thing. This is about a particular campus. But what I want you to notice is the artwork, right? There isn't a photo here anywhere, right? So I don't even know who this letter's from. I immediately know who this letter's from, right? And then there's two photos. I'm going to have to get my glasses here. Life groups are the main way we connect with college students. Preaching to college students is something that God has given me a passion for, right? So if I just read those two captions, right, I know what this ministry is about. And then if you go to the next page, I know I can't do this alone is his next subhead, right? We didn't talk about this, but you want to break stuff up visually so it makes it easy. So if I just read the subheads and I read the captions and the photos, I know enough of what's going on. And then this is a tool that you're going to see a lot. You want to break down whatever the total amount is. You want to break it down into, and you'll see this in a lot of the materials I'm going to share. You want to break it down into, I need 10 people to do $5 or 20 people. Break it down into specific gifts. So then you give people a handle that they can grab. And then your question for them, if they're compelled to be involved, is not how much. Your question is, where do you see yourself on this chart? And what you will be surprised to find is that it never plays out exactly how it is. Or, you know, it doesn't, if you say you're going to get 10 gifts in this area, you don't maybe get 10. But some people will actually move up because now they see what's needed, right? And now you've explained to them, what is it going to take to accomplish that, right? And then how can you be part? Not how can you be part, look at this last subhead. Not how can you be part of raising my support. Not how can you give to my ministry, right? What's the promise that he's going to make if you invest in his ministry? How can you be part of reaching Indy? Very, very subtle, right? but much more compelling, this letter versus this letter, right? And then the last thing is, how can you give, right? What is it that that people need to do? There's a website, there's a cell, there's all different ways to give. So, and guess what? He raised his support, right? In time. Just compare the two, right? This one is a guide for you. Use subheads, make a promise, use an inciting action, use captions and photos, right? And then that last one, you would have to know Indianapolis, because this is geared to people who know Indianapolis. This is where I live, right? But this last photo, the caption says, Indianapolis is a big challenge, but together we can really make a difference, right? So that's a particular iconic place, that's downtown, the canal. Everyone who's in Indy knows that, right? So it isn't about giving to a ministry. It's about making a difference, reaching people with the gospel, having a way to impact the campus. So, questions? Is this? Hopefully, this is helpful, right? I mean, and these aren't made up. This was real, and this is real, right? And I'm telling you, I don't think you would ever got anywhere close sending this letter. And my friend Mark knew it, but he didn't know exactly what to tell him. So you can use this as a guide, right? Use these principles as a guide to help you tell your story. And so the key is actually writing a compelling story isn't that much harder than writing a really lengthy letter if you use the principles and just, you know, self-assess what you're doing. Okay? All right. The other thing you want to do, and this is something that most ministries are terrible at, is update the story as it unfolds. Provide updates to show what has been accomplished. Thank people often in person, in writing, or on calls. Again, I don't know how this plays into the world right now, but in the U.S. mail, you almost never get anything in the mail that's handwritten anymore. People send texts. They send emails. They do all this stuff. But one thing I've learned, and one thing I've encouraged ministries to do, this is years ago, my first job, I was in a management development program, and they taught us to write, they call them three-line notes. It doesn't take you long to write a note, three lines. Some people get flummoxed because they see a blank sheet of paper and they think they got to write, you know, the next great Shakespearean play. I would challenge you to write three lines, if you use mail or you use email, just thanking them for what they've done. Don't make it more than three lines. You know, Steve, so appreciate the work that you're doing for us. If you weren't there, I could not accomplish what I needed to do in my session. Thanks again for all your hard work. Boom, I'm out. That's it. Put Steve on the spot. I think if he got that note, which I'll probably send to him, he would like that, right? All he knows is that I've recognized that his contribution is contributing to this ministry. That's all you need to do. This is a huge gap in most ministries. The only time they send something is either to have an update which doesn't follow the principles or tell a compelling story, or they're asking for something, or there's a crisis. And you build relationship by thanking people. You build relationship by saying, hey, you know what? You contributed to this fund, and here's what we've done. And I'm going to show you some examples of that in a minute, too. And here's what I found in that world is a lot of times, I've got a specific example. There was a capital campaign, and this couple gave a pledge of like $5,000. I think it was $5,600 or $5,800 over 3 years. But this communication from the organization was, this is what we've been doing. So that wasn't a lot of money in the scheme of things. But in that time, they had received some funds from a stock sale. And so they sat down with the director and they said, we want to now pledge $50,000, and wrote a $25,000 check in his office and said, we'll get you the other $25,000. The point is you can't look at people by the size of what they can give. You want to look at people by the heart they have for the ministry, because God may use them in the future to be the resources that you need. too often, professional development people, they'll size up people by what their giving capacity is. There's probably some room for that, but I think it's the wrong way to look at people. Because if you go back to Moses' example, as he said, here's what we need to accomplish what God wants us to do. Now you all go away and you pray, what can you bring? He didn't give anyone, said, you got to give this amount, you got to do this, you got to do that, you got to do that. And if you do this, God will bless you. He said, you need to do what God has compelled you to do. And go back and look at that passage. As they were moved in their heart, that's what they did. And I think that's the right way to approach it, is find people who understand what it is that God is calling you to do, because God's plans will always have God's provision. It also tells them that they made a good decision to invest. People who have a heart for generosity, whether it be through their own resources, their relationships, their financial giving, they want to know that they've made a good return. I call it the ROI, eternal return on investment. They want to make sure that when they stand before God and God said, I gave you these resources, how did you use them to impact my kingdom? They want to be that. I've met people who, I actually, there's a gentleman I know that his dad left him a lot of money. And it was because of that money he felt the pressure to handle it well. And that's what brought him to Christ. Because he just felt this pressure of what, I don't want to mess this up. And now he's become a tremendously generous person because he saw, and God's blessed him even more, right? So you want to make sure that you thank them and show them progress, because it will reinforce that they've made a good decision. And then let them know what else needs to be done. Because you don't know, they may have more resources, or something may have changed, or they may be even more excited about the ministry than what they were before. And I can tell you that this works for individuals and it works for organizations. These principles, 3-line thank yous. Tell them about progress. Tell them what needs to be done. All those things. And these are huge gaps. The one thing I don't want you to be discouraged by is you don't have to be some extravagant graphic designer to pull this off. I'm talking about simple emails. I showed you Evan's letter. That was not hard for him to do, right? But some of your organizations may have resources. And here's the other thing, too. This is where you can reach out to those who know about your ministry. There may be people in your ministry that are supporting your ministry that may have these kinds of talents that are willing to volunteer their time. I literally could fill this time with stories of ways I've seen God provide through people's talents and relationships and connections and things, just over and over and over again. And so I think sometimes we only think of giving as money, but it's actually much more than that, because God's plans always have God's 100%, 100%. This will sound very tactical, but I think it's a question of stewardship and using your time. So you need to look at your whole donor base, or people that you think could be donors, and segment them. You can pick on how you segment them based on giving, size or frequency, their involvement in the ministry, or length of relationship. You have to decide how to do that. And then you should define how you will communicate. Personal visits, group meeting, or written communication. Oftentimes, I get asked to help individuals who are trying to raise support to go into the mission field. And I have another great story. There's a guy who felt compelled to leave a very prominent construction job to go to help build some things in this ministry. The dude could build a hospital. Literally, that was the last project he was working on. The idea of raising support to go on the mission field, it gave him hives. We were sitting at a restaurant, myself and his wife, and his daughter, and he was literally like getting hot. He was so nervous about this. I said, Steve, this is not a worry. This is not a worry. And so we literally said, okay, let's figure out all the relationships you have. And you'd be surprised when you actually document this. Any ministry, you have more than you realize. Some you may not have contacted in a while, but you may have them. And then you only have so much time to make a personal visit, whether that be a Zoom call or in person, right? And then sometimes, and this is often something that isn't used, I've seen this happen where you ask people, would you be willing to host a group meeting? So Greg Pritchard, European Leadership Forum, he asked my wife and I to do that, which we did willingly. A few years ago, we had a meeting in our home, and then we invited people, let them know this is what the ministry is about. And Greg and Tony, those may be names that you recognize, came, and we hosted a meeting in our home and exposed, I think, 12 to 14 people who had never heard about ELF, right? And I've been surprised, not any longer, but initially, how many times people will be willing to do that if they believe in what you're doing in your ministry. And it's very effective. My brother here from the Ukraine, we actually hosted something at our church. There's a ministry, and I'm not directly involved with it, but we hosted something. We have a fellowship hall, and they did something called Taste of Ukraine, where they made a bunch of Ukrainian food to talk about ministry into Ukraine. So it was just, come, we're going to have this meal. We have a really nice fellowship hall with a kitchen, and they made this meal and invited people from the community, whatever, just to be exposed to the Ukraine, right? I love that idea, right? Love that. Just taste the Ukraine. Like, I don't know. I've never had Ukrainian food. I bet you it's pretty good. But anyway, so it was a way to expose people. So there's all these creative ways. And there was a team that got together and helped cook it and set it up and make it all happen, right? I think they had like 100 people come. I mean, it's crazy, right? But now those 100 people are exposed. Not everyone's going to respond, but I'm just telling you, God is way more creative. And then who do you just need to communicate through writing? There are some people that you maybe can't visit, but make sure that your list is there so that you're keeping them aware. And if you do talk to them, ask about them. Don't just talk about you. One of the things that I will tell you that the ministry that I'm involved with, the most significantly Fort Wilderness on the board, is one thing that they will do is they will spend time in a given month just calling up constituencies and just saying, how can we pray for you? And there are some amazing stories about they've called at a time when someone's just come home from a cancer diagnosis or other things like that. I mean, the timing of these calls has just been significant. And so they'll ask for permission. Can they, you know, sometimes they won't name the person, sometimes they will. Then the staff commits, right? So it isn't about you just asking for money. It's what can I do to pray for you? That's even more powerful than what can I do to thank you for that. And then understand what's on their heart and see if it aligns with what you're called to do, right? Those guys who build stuff had concrete on their heart. I guarantee you that was never on my heart. But praise God that it was on their heart and they figured they could solve that, right? And then build in updates and plan thank yous. If you, there's a study by Dominican University, a professor there did a study on people who write down their goals. People who write down their goals are 42% more likely to reach their goals than people who do not. And if you share your goals with someone else, you increase your chances even more. And I love this phrase. This is from the study. It says, because now you have a partner in believing. So if you just say, I'm going to write thank yous, but you never set a goal to write 3 this weekend or 5 this weekend, it doesn't matter. It doesn't really matter what the goal is. What matters is that you write it down and you share it with someone because now you've made yourself accountable. And they can initially, hey, did you write those 3 thank yous? You know what your capacity is. This is like people that go to the gym in January, right? I'm going to get fit. I'm going to, and they go and they lift and they're sore and they never go back again, right? It's not how you stay healthy. You stay healthy as a ministry by setting realistic goals, writing them down, and sharing them with someone. And you will move forward in your communications. Again, most important principle is make sure what you're doing is aligned with what God is calling you to do, because all the principles in the world will not go against that. But what I can say with great surety, which is why I came to Poland to do this, is when you as a ministry and leadership team and board are aligned with what God has called you to do, God's plans will always have God's resources, and using these principles will make you much more effective at getting to that goal quicker. All right, I'm going to hand out some, well, actually, I'm not. My brother Steve is going to hand out so he can get that big 3-line thank you note from me. Some things. Again, all this stuff I'm giving you is not meant for us to read it. I just want to show you some examples. This is what I said. I don't want you to be intimidated by the design of these, right? Because they have a full marketing team, right? But I just want you to see the principles. So the first one I want you to look at, and these are meant to be a lot bigger, right? I printed them this size because I could have never gotten them in my suitcase if they were full size. The first one says love and legacy, right, on the cover, okay? And it's a little weird because they're supposed to be, it's supposed to be an eight-page brochure, so it feels like it's out of order because what you would do is you would print it out and staple it in the middle, right? But this was the idea of laying out for the constituency that we're about to go into a capital campaign. What I want you to pay attention to is this page here. First of all, you can notice that there are photos and captions, right? Look at, there's pictures of trees on that page. The beauty of the land points to the God of wonders, right? And then look at the one, dad's, the one down here with a kid on his shoulders. Dads take time for their kids away from the distractions of routine, right? And then this last line here, a comprehensive plan impact more lives for Christ. Now, in the end, this is going to be about building buildings and doing some stuff. But in the end, this is about impacting more lives for Christ. And then families face a big challenge. So this is a capital campaign to raise money to build some facilities and stuff. It's not what this is about, right? And then, I mean, this gets real technical, but then there's a map on the back that kind of shows if you're a constituency, what you're going to do, right? So what this did is just set the stage that, you know what, there's needs in our culture. We believe we can meet the needs. Here's what we're going to do, okay? And then the next one that followed up, because sometimes you have to let them know, this is what we believe God is calling us to do. Don't let your first communication be your ask. Let your first communication be, this is what we think God is calling us to do. This is how we came about it. So that they can start to get their heart and mind aligned with, okay, because again, I'm going to go back to Moses. Moses didn't say, all right, we're going to build this tabernacle. What do you guys got? No, notice the story. He said, you guys go away. And then you come back because you need to pray about it. That's the exact approach here. This is what God is calling us to do. Now, you need to think about it. And God needs to stir their heart and mind towards that. So don't let your first communication in something big just be an ask. And then the next one I want you to look at is this one, the Fort Future. Now, this is very jam-packed, it's in Christ bearing fruit, impacting generations, right? So this is, again, I want you to see this. This is about raising money to build buildings. And that front cover has nothing to do with buildings. It has everything to do with impacting lives because that's the mission. And then the other thing I want you to see is on the back, would you join us, right? It's that same thing. And then it gives you a scale of what ways that you can be involved at different gift sizes. And again, this is a significant ministry. I don't want you to get discouraged and say, well, we don't have this kind of design and all that. None of that matters. It's the principle. That's why I started by showing you Evan's letter, because Evan's letter is very simple. Any of you in this room can create that. But the principles that Evan used and the principles here are the same. They're just a little bit more graphic. And so, this prints out a lot bigger. But it's that same, would you join us? This is Moses. This is what God's called us to do. Here's the example of how we're going to get there. And now the question is, would you join us? And here's the levels that we need for people to participate. And then that's the conversation that you have with people. Okay? And then the next one I want you to see is this one. It says, for lives not yet impacted. All right? So do you see the theme here? There isn't a lot of stuff about buildings. It's all about people. But only 11% to go. And then that last thing is the completed projects. It's showing, you know what? People have invested in the ministry. We said we were going to do this. Here's what we've done, right? And we're at a final push, and then there's things to do there. So now these communications take place over years, and there's interim stuff. I didn't print out everything, But I want you to see the major touch points. Here's what God, this is Moses. Here's what God's calling us to do, right? Go away, pray, see if you would be a participant. Guess what? God is raising up people and raising up resources to do this. Would you consider finishing it, right? And then the last thing I want you to see is this letter. And this is just a change in process, right? Because it gets very specific. And this is, if you look at the back, it's 7% on the back that's needed. So it went from 11 to 7%. So you're continuing to show progress. So when you get to the end of something, you want to show progress. Because what that says to people who have invested is, other people are joining me in this work. Other people are seeing this as valuable. And then there's some specific things to do. The other thing I want you to note is these were all fort communications. This was communications from two donor families who have been very involved. Sometimes it doesn't have to be your organization. Sometimes it can be someone else saying why they invest in the ministry, why they think it's important. Sometimes that can be even more important than you talking. So I'm just watching faces. I'm hoping what I've been talking about is now connected to these things. And I'm going to tell you, Evan's letter and this material, different graphically, different, it's the same principles. It's the same principles, and it works. And the last thing I heard yesterday before, or 2 days ago when I got on the plane, it's now 5% to the goal. And I think we're going to get to the end of the goal by the end of May, which is amazing. Let me tell you two other stories. I told you the story about the granite and the guy saying his father-in-law is the most impactful. So 60 years later, before God was setting this up, this young boy was going to be at camp, and now his son was going to own this quarry that we were going to need resources for. But in the U.S., there was something called emerald ash borer. I don't know if that hit other places in the world, but it was a particular insect that just killed ash trees. And so cities would have to go in and literally like take out whole, you know, ash trees everywhere. Well, there was a guy who was connected to Fort, knew we were building the amphitheater, and he went to the city and said, "What are you going to do with those ash trees?" He says, "Well, we're just going to pulp them." He goes, "Would you give them to me? Because I'm going to get someone to mill them, and we're going to use them for construction." They're like, "Sure." So he got all this wood, got someone to mill it. So emerald ash borer was tearing apart trees. This guy had the vision because he knew of the resources that was needed to build this thing. And he went and said, "Would you be willing to give me those ash trees?" So he got it. I don't know how he did it. I don't know enough about milling stuff. But so all that wood, most of the wood that's in that amphitheater, I wish I had a picture of it, was because this guy had it in his heart to go and ask them for those ash trees, which would have been pulped and been mulched and been useless. And now they're the seats and the backs of an amphitheater where people praise God. You can't make it up. And that's the thing that I see, is that when you communicate effectively and people understand what God is calling you to do and how they can participate and what resources are needed, God gets so creative in so many ways that you just can't even imagine. I can't make it up. And here's the goofy thing is, I've got hours and hours of more stories like that because I've just seen it over and over and over and over and over again. And that's what I want you guys to catch the vision of. Yes, use the principles. Yes, try and become more effective in your communication. But most importantly, know and believe what God is calling you to do and what happens if you go away. And then just believe that God's plans have God's provision, because he does it over and over again. And he'll do it in ways that you'll just be like, you'll never even, you couldn't come up with it. You just can't make the story up. There was a young man in our church body that had was he was brilliant. He graduated from MIT in 3 years, got double masters. And after he graduated, he felt like the Lord was calling him to be a missionary to Japan. And he's like, this is nuts. Lord, don't you know how much I could make if I went and worked in industry and how many missionaries to support? But he did. He went. And that experience right after college made him realize that one of the most effective ways for him to reach people in Japan was to do it as a businessman. Because men do not look at missionaries as real, like real. It's just part of their culture. So he went back, he hired on, he ended up in our church, and he felt called to go back to Japan as a tent-making missionary to work in business. Our church, he would be sent by our church, but we wouldn't provide missionary support. So we did. We sent him. I actually was sent by our elders with two other guys in 2003 to go with him to Japan and to confirm whether this was his calling. And we came back, the other, myself and the two other guys, and said, absolutely. So he was there. He married an American girl who actually had a passion for Japan. 13, 14 years ago, they adopted a Japanese boy. And that Japanese boy was on the spectrum. If you know anything about Japan, there isn't a lot of care for those type of kids. They don't really acknowledge those challenges. And so at the time, we had a facility we still do in the Philippines, so I'd travel back from Asia. I could go through Hong Kong, Tokyo, or I could go through Korea. And so I decided on this trip to stop and see them. And his name is Jonathan, and Jonathan and I walked around one night, and he was very conflicted because he adopted this boy, Joshua, and there was no services to help him. And so he felt called to Japan, but he's like, do I need to move back to the U.S. so that I can get the proper care for my son? And this is where you just see God show up. And we were walking, and I said, why don't we just start something? Now, I'm going to tell you, you could never pick two more unlikely people to start an autism therapy center than he and I. Didn't know a thing about it. But God's plans have God's provision. So I went back to the church and I said, hey, I was with Jonathan and Kendra. Here's what they're thinking. Jonathan went to work and found a space. And so that's what you'll see here on this front page. It was an empty space. And so I went to four guys in our church who had the gift of carpentry and building, right? Just what Moses said. Those, I can never pronounce those names, but those, go back to 36 and 35. He identified three guys who had the wisdom. And I went to four of the guys that had built stuff all around. I said, hey guys, what would you think about going to Japan to help build out this thing? Now, two of these guys had never been out of the country. Didn't even have a passport. But they prayed about it and they decided, yeah, we'll go do it. Now, this won't maybe mean that much to you if you're European or outside, but we don't build in the metric system. They build in the metric system there. So that was a big, they didn't have any rulers or anything on metric. But so you'll see that on this front page, it was an empty shell. They started to build out. That's what it is, finished. And those are the guys that were there. And one of the things that, one of the guys that went, it was God gifted him in building things. He just passed away last week. And so they're going to show these pictures at his funeral because these guys were stretched. They did not like Japanese food. They loved McDonald's. They found every McDonald's in Japan because they did not like Japanese food. And they still talk about it and they still gig me about it. But what I love is that those guys were willing to go, and you see this build out. And on the back side, you see, they built this out. These are two of the guys. The guy on the left, Steve, just passed away. Great man. Exactly what Moses was talking about. And that's Joshua, who's now a teenager, right? And then here you'll see, and I'll talk about this. This is one of the guys, because now that center is a place where kids and moms come, and it's finished there. Let me tell you three quick stories about it. Number one, the head Buddhist priest in the city brings his son to this center because no one else can help him. Now, they're not overtly Christian, but you can tell that there's something going on here. Now, just imagine what happens in that city if that Buddhist priest comes to faith in Christ, because that center's there. The city will be turned over. Second thing is, I had the opportunity last year to go and speak at a men's retreat, and the Lord used it in a profound way in some of these churches. And one of the churches was so profoundly impacted that the women went to the pastors and said, "Our husbands are different men. We want to have a women's retreat." Well, it takes a lot to plan a retreat, as you can imagine. So they said, "You know what? Let's have one at the Kento Center." So they did a one-day women's retreat there. And in a few weeks, we're going to send 6 people from our church to do the first ever vacation Bible school based in the Kento Center. So God's plans always have God's provision. So what I want you to see in this is sometimes it's not money. It's agreeing with what God has to do. The great thing is, Jonathan and Kendra have done such a great job with Joshua. He's a great young man. And they've been an example to all these other families. And the last thing I'll tell you is they opened a coffee shop in the front because these mothers come with their children who can be loved on by people and helped. And now they can sit and have coffee and muffins and do things like that. All because God's plans have God's provision. So I get a little emotional. But when I see this, it's just hard to not believe this stuff works, right? And there's bigger things that I think can come for that. But we've seen it build slowly. They've been there 20 years. And they may have 125 kids for VBS, many of them who are non-Christians. So the impact that this will have, because guys like Steve Wynn and Larry McWhorter and Vince Flecker and Tommy Hutzel, willing to get on a plane, make themselves very uncomfortable, but use what God had given them to build this center out. So I don't know what God has got for you in your ministry, but make sure that it's aligned with His purposes. And then let me, years from now, tell your story like this and say, "You're not going to believe what happened. This guy gave us a truckload of granite because his father-in-law was at camp 60 years ago. Or this guy went to the city and got emerald ash board trees that they were going to throw away. And now they're used as seats and backs in an amphitheater where God gets praised every day. God's plans have God's provision. Now, as a steward, you need to be effective as a communicator and do the best you can in that. But remember, effective communication is more like irrigation than a thunderstorm. Too often with ministries, what you see is that people do a big newsletter, big letter, and they're not consistent. That's why setting that plan of, "I'm going to send 3 thank yous this week," or "I'm going to send..." The plan, I don't even really care what it is. I just know if you don't have one, you won't do it. So figure out what it is, stick to it, make yourself accountable, because you will have partners in believing. And if you know anything about gardening or agronomy, my wife is phenomenal at this stuff, phenomenal. I'm the beneficiary of it. She has a garden. She raises flowers, but her garden is the best. Cherry tomatoes, anyone's a fan, I love them. She just fills my basket with those. But she will tell you that every night she's out there just watering a little bit. Right? Now, if it rains, she doesn't, but every night. It's not dump it and then don't water it for a month. Every night, out there with the hose, sprinkling, right? That's how your marketing communication needs to be, is over time, you'll get a better result if you irrigate rather than have a thunderstorm. So here's some questions to ask yourself. Do you see fundraising as a spiritual activity? Or is it just a manipulative worldly action? I hope after today you see this as a spiritual activity. Number 2, is your story told in a compelling way? What I believe is that if God has called you to a particular ministry in your particular location, you've got a compelling story to tell. You just need to tell it that way. Number three is your call to action clear. Is there a way for people to get involved that makes them understand how they can touch? Is there people, if you need help graphically, are there people that can do that? If you need help with computers, are there people that can do that? If you need help building, are there people that can do that? If you need someone to interview an occupational therapist because that's a profession, are there people that can do that? I just find that sometimes we just think too small about what God can do when we're aligned with his purposes, because we only think of, that's why I did not pick the title for this. I would have made this a different title, but that's the title they wanted for the seminar, because fundraising isn't just about funds. It's about resources to accomplish what God has called you about. Are you only asking for money, or are you making your needs known? Go back to Exodus. Moses made the needs known. We need materials, we need talent, we need wood, we need, you know, that whole list. It's a shopping list, right? One thing I've seen a ministry do is they do the top 10. Here's our top 10 needs. Some of them are very small and some of them are very large. But people like that. I can pick that off, right? Do you have a clear contact plan that you can execute? This is what I was talking about earlier. Can you execute this? And then the other thing, too, is what can you start doing immediately? Don't try and, as I say, eat the pizza without cutting it into slices. I think that works cross-culturally, right? Everyone has pizza somewhere. You know, you can't eat a pizza without cutting it into slices. So don't say, okay, I got to take all of this and do it all together. You'll never be able to do it. Just make a list. I'll start using photos, and I'll start writing captions. I'll start using subheads. I don't know what the list is, but just pick something that you can do immediately. And then what will some things that will take some more time, right? It might make you might take you a little bit more time to develop a contact plan, right, of who you're going to talk to directly, who you're going to have as a in a group meeting or through writing. That may take a little more time. That's the biggest thing. I don't want you all to be discouraged after this. I'm throwing a lot at you. So just pick a few things. Pick a few things that you can do and just start doing them. And then pick a couple other things. And you will be surprised how far you will get in a couple years. Everything I'm showing you, well, the Evan thing, that was not one draft to get to what I showed you as the final. I think there were three or four drafts in between there, if I remember correctly. But I wanted to show you the before and after. So it's going to take a little work, and don't get discouraged. You will get better and better and better. And what I will tell you is that it will become intuitive over time. When I was on the advancement committee for Fort, I would look at everything that they would do. Now I never need to look at it because the principles are just inculcated in the organization. They always use photos. They always write captions. And they don't write a caption about what's in the photo. They tell the impact. I love that, you know, that people can experience the God of wonders in creation. That's what the ministry is about, not about you're going to camp in a forest or something silly like that. And I love that they have people on the photos or on the covers. It's about impacting people's lives and impacting generations. But it's taken them a while to get there. And then what do you need to help make and support making this happen? So think about, do you need graphics? Do you need people to write? Can you do it yourself? I mean, what do you need, right? And just be clear about that. Make a list. Because in the small things and in the big things, God's provision. One last story. So Ann is part of a nursing ministry. And so I told her this story, but I'll finish with this story. So 24 years ago, a good friend of ours had a son who was 13, and he got sick, got sepsis, and ended up dying. It was very, very hard. But out of that, we thought that people would want to do something. So we decided to build a health center at the camp. It's one thing that if you're ever on a board or something, you'll find out it's usually something that's always needed, but it's pushed down to the bottom because you always want to build cabins and things that can do that, but it's really critical. And so it was the first time 25, 26 years ago I ever was involved in raising anything. And that was when I began to see God's plan, to have God's provision. So we had a plan, and we needed materials. We needed drywall. We needed things. And so we said we need $70,000 to be able to build this. So this is 25 years ago, right? It was a lot of money, but it was still. But we decided we're going to raise $100,000. And the reason we're going to raise $100,000 was because we wanted to have a sustaining fund, a fund that would continually supply what was needed for that health center, because we didn't want it to hit the operating budget. Because sometimes you build something and then you just add to the operating budget and you create another funding need. So as we were getting the materials, we did exactly what we said. We need drywall, we need this. Well, there was a guy that worked as a drywaller for our company. He went to his boss, who we did not know, and said, hey, told him this story, we need drywall. And the guy says, I'll donate the drywall. Well, there's a problem. Drywall is really heavy, and you got to transport it from where we're at to the camp, which is about 550 miles. I don't know what that translates in kilometers. So we had that need. There's a guy who's a trucker. They said, I got to go to South Dakota, which is on the way. I'll take it for you. So God provided the drywall, and he provided a trucker to take it. Cost is zero. Another guy heard that we needed light fixtures. He had an electrical company. He heard about it, didn't know the guy, said, I'll donate the light fixtures. So we had to transport the light fixtures. But here's the amazing thing. We got people to go up, help build it for the budget we had this sustaining fund. But over the years, over the life of that sustaining fund is, I don't think it's ever been touched. Because people have come to camp and they've seen it. They're in the medical field, or they're nurses, or they're doctors, or they're EMTs. And they're like, oh, you need some bandages. I'll get that for you. Oh, you need fill in the blank, right? I'm way out of my league here. Ann could probably fill in the stuff you'd need to do that. And it's like the widow's flower jar in the story of Elijah. I don't think it's ever been touched. But here's the most important thing. I've had camp nurses come to me personally and go to the director and tell stories about how they've led kids to Christ in that place. Because normally, if you're sick and you need to be quarantined, you're at camp and all your camp people get to go out and play and you got to be stuck in your cabin. It's miserable. But now you do two things. You put this kid in a special place so they're quarantined and they're cared for and they have one-on-one time with the nurse. And they're not watching all their friends go out and play. And recently, the director got a letter from a girl who came to camp when she was 14, sick, miserable week. But it was then that she came to faith in Christ. And now she's a wife and a mother. And she talked about how her life was changed because for a week at camp, even though she didn't get to do anything, but talk to a nurse, right? So my point is whether it's drywall or light fixtures, or it doesn't matter what it is. God's plans always have God's provision. And that's what I would encourage you to do, is say, Lord, what is it you need us to do? What is it that you've called us to do? And then show up, surprise us, give Keith some stories to tell next time he talks about this, because I haven't even tapped all of them. And so the most important thing about that story is not that there was drywall and electrical. The most important part of that story is that building is there and people are coming to faith in Christ and talking about the week that they had at camp that changed their life with a fever and probably throwing up and not getting to do anything fun. That, to me, is amazing. So